Welcome to Gospel Tangents, the best source for Mormon history, science, and theology. I'm Rick Bennett. You know, we've talked a lot about Gerald Tanner, but you may not know very much about his life and his demise. So his wife, Sandra Tanner, will talk about Gerald growing up and as well as his studies in Mormon history. We'll also talk about the end of his life. It's a very important conversation. I hope you check it out. Now, does he have a background in history or document examining or anything like that?
No, Gerald was a failure in school. If you looked at his high school records, you would say there is no way this guy would ever end up doing research and writing. I mean, he was, when he went to the University of Utah, and I don't know how he got in, his grades were terrible in high school. I guess it speaks to there weren't many kids going to university from Utah at that time or something that they would even let him go. But he had to take remedial English, which was the best thing that could have happened to him because it spiffed him up on a lot of English stuff he needed to know. But no, Gerald had very bad eyesight. And as a kid, the doctor said his eyes were failing and told his parents not to encourage him to read anything, don't let him strain his eyes or use them for anything. So he was not encouraged in any way to spend time in books. I mean, his dad was a graduate from BYU. He came from an educated family. The Tanners have been professors at BYU. And, you know, I mean, the family line of the Tanners was an educated family, but he was not given encouragement to read at all. Then when he got to be a teen, they finally figured out he needed glasses, but his eyes were so bad that Gerald wore the first contact lens, and I have them over home. They're the size of a quarter.
Really?
Yes, and they cover the whole front half of the eye. I mean, they must have been excruciatingly painful to wear, but the contacts help to preserve his vision. Some way they hold the retina and that in place, some way that it doesn't, it was to help it not deteriorate more. So he was not encouraged to be a scholar or to spend time reading. But once he had his faith crisis and that all started when he was 18 and the bishop said it was time to think about going on a mission. Well, he'd been drinking and smoking and carousing around, and so like, yeah, mission. And so then he decided he better figure out if he really believed Mormonism enough to go on a mission. That's what started this whole thing, is his research into that led him to Fawn Brody's book, led him to find out about the reorganized church, led him to find out about the different splinter groups, about David Whitmer's little pamphlet and address to all believers in Christ. And in Whitmer's pamphlet, it's his last public printing statement on Mormonism, Whitmer says that Joseph changed his revelations and that Whitmer was in the room when a lot of the early ones were given. And he says, I know how they were given and they don't read the same, that Joseph edited them. So that all raised questions in Gerald's mind. He made a couple of pilgrimages to Independence, Missouri to check out the different splinter groups back there. And that launched him into his research. And this is before I met him. And then when I met him, he starts telling me all about his research and gets me into thinking about all these things. We get married and keep pursuing this. I mean, we went up and talked to LeGrand Richards, an apostle, in 1960 about problems with the first vision. And we just hit the ground running, I guess you'd say, as a married couple researching early Mormonism.
So did you get married in the temple then?
Or? Oh, no. When Gerald and I got married, we knew at that point we didn't believe anything of Mormonism past the Book of Mormon. We were persuaded by David Whitmer's pamphlet that Joseph had changed everything, changed all the doctrines, brought in priesthood that wasn't there at the beginning. And so we thought, okay, we can take the Book of Mormon and the Bible and just go with that and scrap the rest of it. So that's where we were at the time we got married. We knew we didn't want a temple marriage.
So you did believe in the Book of Mormon?
Yes, we believed in the Book of Mormon for, we got married in 59 and we gave up the Book of Mormon the end of the fall of 62. That as ex-Mormons, we still believed the Book of Mormon for a couple of years there. And our original research was to vindicate the Book of Mormon, that the rest of Mormonism, you can believe the Book of Mormon, you don't have to accept the rest of this stuff. You can scrap Joseph Smith and Brigham Young and all that stuff and just go with the Bible and Book of Mormon. But then we started having people challenge us, well, why would you accept the Book of Mormon if you can see that Joseph Smith made up the rest of this stuff? What makes you think he didn't make up the Book of Mormon? So then we went into a deep study of American history and American Indian and sources for the Book of Mormon and archaeology and all those things. And so we finally decided, well, there doesn't appear to be any historical evidence for the Book of Mormon as an ancient text. So we can't keep endorsing that. So we set it aside, just went back to being Christians and following the Bible. But then we had all our family, friends, everybody like, so, you crazy kids, what are you doing? You know? And that got us into printing because we're trying to explain to our family and friends why we couldn't believe it anymore. And hence developed this whole lifetime of writing and researching on Mormonism. And you were going to ask me about the term anti-Mormon.
Yeah, let's go ahead there. So I asked you, because a lot of people call you an anti-Mormon. What do you think of that term?
I don't like the term because I think it implies an animosity towards the whole group. Like saying you're anti-black would imply against blacks in general. I don't see myself as anti-Mormon. I'm not against the Mormon people. I mean, that's my family. I still have Mormon family that are active. So I don't see myself as anti-Mormon. I'm anti-Mormonism. I don't believe the doctrines or history of Mormonism. I think it shows Joseph Smith was an inventor of the whole thing. So I'm anti-Joseph Smith, if you want to put it that way. But when you say anti-Mormon, I think it raises an image in people's mind of an animosity towards the whole group. And I don't feel that. Mormon critic, I will accept, or critic of Mormonism, sure. No problem with being labeled a critic. But the anti-Mormon to me is trying to make me look bigoted against a whole group of people.
Okay, well that's very interesting. So what happened with Gerald?
Gerald in about 1998, I realized he must be developing Alzheimer's. During the 90s, my family, we joked about him being the absent-minded professor. There were just small details of life that just would elude him. And so it's like we all thought he was just so engrossed in his studies that he didn't pay attention to details. It's like I heard stories that Albert Einstein couldn't remember where his umbrella was and stuff like that, you know. So you think, okay, he's just the absent-minded professor. But then one night we're watching a Jazz basketball game on TV, and I think it was must have been the end of the first quarter or start of the second or something, and the score was like 28-32, and the Jazz were down. And Gerald turned to me and he says, "How much are we down by?" And it just hit me. My whole world collapsed at that moment. Gerald was an ace on math. Now, it doesn't show from his school records, but he really was. He could do math in his head just perfectly. And to ask me what the difference was between 28 and 32, everything came together of all those little idiosyncrasies, the not remembering things, the misplaced items, and it all came together at that point. And I thought, oh my word, he's got a memory issue. He's got a problem. This could be Alzheimer's. And I took him to our general doctor, and he just thought Gerald was exhausted and tired and accepted Gerald's story of, you know, no, it's just stress, you know, I'm good. And so my doctor was saying, you know, no, he's just stressed out. No, I think we got a bigger problem here. And but then different family events came up, my one daughter's marriage, and I knew at that point that it would be obvious to everyone that he had Alzheimer's. Because at the rehearsal for my daughter's wedding, he was supposed to walk her down the aisle, as in a Methodist church, and he was supposed to walk her down the aisle and then hand her off to her husband and go sit down. And the minister's explaining what Gerald's supposed to do and say, who gets this woman in marriage, her mother and I do, you know, and sit down. Well, at the rehearsal, by the time he gets up front, he can't remember what he's supposed to do. Hmm. And afterwards, I told the minister, I says, I'm sure you've realized we have a problem. Houston, we have a problem. And I says, all I can say is when the time comes, if he doesn't remember to sit down, I'll just have to come up and get him. I don't know what else to do. And I thought I would have to. We waited. Oh, please, Lord, make Gerald remember to sit down. And we waited several seconds. It was a very awkward pause. And then finally, the minister's trying to motion to him, go sit down, you know. And finally, Gerald came and sat down. But at that point, everyone in the family knew something was wrong. And then there was just a steady decline. He died in 2006, in October 1st. And it was a terrible thing to watch this brilliant mind just melt away. And every day you would realize he forgot something else. And taking care of an Alzheimer's patient is a very hard, long, drawn out thing. But Gerald was very sweet through the whole thing. Some Alzheimer's patients become very impatient and angry because, I mean, nothing in their world works right. They don't understand it anymore. So they think it's everybody else, not them. So some will become very agitated and angry. Gerald never was. He was just the sweetest guy through the whole thing, but he just kept slipping away. And I kept him home clear up until the last week of his life, which was possible because we lived next door to the bookstore here. And between my employees and myself, we were able to keep an eye on him, take care of him, spend time with him and things. And I was able to keep him at home till that last week. He just got so far gone that he had to be in some place. Mm-hmm. But he quit eating and so in essence, I guess you'd say he starved to death. But that's typical of Alzheimer's patients. They forget to swallow, forget to breathe, forget to eat, whatever. Their body just starts shutting down. So
it must have been tough to watch.
That was sad. But then the question was, do I keep the bookstore going afterwards? I was so worn out after taking care of Gerald all those years that I was ready to just bag it. But I kept having people call and want to talk to me and want to help with research, or they want to just have someone to talk to when they were going through their crisis of faith, that I thought, well, I'll keep it going this year. And then I'll keep it going the next year. And here we are 11 years later, and I've still got the bookstore going. I don't know how long that'll be, but anyways, for the time being, I'm still here.
I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Sandra Tanner. In our next conversation, we'll talk about the Book of Mormon's Isaiah problem. There are some scholars who think that up to four different people wrote the Book of Isaiah. I asked Sandra Tanner if she agrees with the LDS Church's belief in a single Isaiah theory. I think her answer may surprise you. But as far as the argument that the BYU scholars would make that there was just one Isaiah, not four Isaiahs, would you tend to agree with?
I would be more to their side of view than the critic's side of Isaiah.
I hope you enjoyed that short clip from our next interview. If you'd like to hear the entire interview uncut, please go to our patreon.com/gospeltangents and subscribe for just $5 a month. If you'd like a transcript of this, please click the yellow subscribe button at gospeltangents.com, and I'll send you this and all future transcripts. Also, if you'd like a paperback like we've got here, those are available at our website at amazon.com. Just do a search for Gospel Tangents. Please get all updates at our Facebook page at facebook.com/gospeltangents. We're also on Twitter at Gospel Tangents. You can also get transcripts individually at our website, gospeltangents.com/shop. Finally, make sure that you subscribe on our Apple Podcast page. Just do a quick search for Gospel Tangents there and give us a 5-star review while you're at it. Thanks again for listening. Your support helps create more Mormon history classes and podcasts such as this, and so I really appreciate you listening. Please share with your friends. Click here to subscribe, here for a transcript, and over here you'll see some more of our great videos. Thanks again.